All right, here we are. This is a special episode today. It is a Friday episode, something I never do, but it happens to fall on the exact day, December 6th, that I started comedy 10 years ago today. 10 years ago today, I stepped on the stage for the very first time, tried stand-up comedy, and then that was it. I never stopped doing it. And now here we are, 10 years. It feels like, seriously, it feels like about 5 years. And I don't know where the rest of it went. A lot of it was a blur from just pounding the ground and grinding. And I can remember a lot of the gigs, and I can't remember a lot of the gigs. It's just been nonstop work for 10 years, and here we are. And I want to drop an episode today because something very, very bizarre happened recently. And I think that, like I always say, things happen for a reason. But the day I started comedy, 2009, December 6th, I walked into the Ha Ha Comedy Club. It was actually 2009, December 6th, I did my first set at the Hollywood Improv. It was like this, so you want to do comedy, this LA stand-ups. A friend of mine now, who's been a friend for 10 years, put on this show and I did it. But the next day, which would be like the 7th, I went to the Ha Ha Cafe open mic and sat next to this guy and we started to talk. We found out that we both had a lot of things in common. He was 47, I was 44. We were both trying to do comedy. People were looking at us like we were out of our minds, like a couple cavemen had rolled in some Sunset Strip tumbleweeds, as I would call it. And we met and we bonded over rock and roll. And thank God this man was here, because you need a friend when you're starting comedy, because it's so weird. And eventually, over that year, first year, I made some great, great friends. And that really helped me to keep going. Guys like Steve Henry, Sean Kerrigan, and my guest today, John J.C. Morgan. Now, the funny thing about John is I had not seen him in years. And recently, we reconnected, because he is now the production manager of the LA Forum. And we reconnected when I was opening for Burr a year ago. I got a call from this guy. He said, "Hey, Dean, it's J.C. Morgan." I go, "Who?" And he goes, "J.C. Morgan." I'm like, "A bank, you know?" And he goes, "No, we used to do comedy together. I run the LA Forum now. I see you're opening for Burr." And I couldn't fucking believe it. So Saturday I saw him at Slayer and I said, "You've got to do the podcast." And I wasn't even thinking of what the date was. And then I realized, holy shit, it's a few days away from my 10-year anniversary. And so we sat down and we discussed those early days of trying to navigate through the insanity of being a brand new open micer. And I cannot think of a better episode to drop today than sitting down with this man. And before I do, I just want to give a big shout out to every one of you that listens to this podcast, that has ever gone to see me do live comedy, that follows me on Instagram or Twitter, whatever. I want to thank all of you. I also want to give some solid love to friends now that I have, that I think if I didn't do comedy, I wouldn't even know these people. And now they're the greatest friends some of the greatest friends I've ever had. Big shout out to Ian Edwards, Steve Henry, Eric Griffin, Billy Rowe, Chris D'Elia, Joe Rogan, Kevin Christie, Joey Diaz, Burr, the Mighty Burr, The King, Marc Maron. The Comedy Store. Thank you, Comedy Store. The Comedy Cellar. Thank you. Greg Riley out there in San Diego. Mike Vinn and everyone at La Jolla Comedy Store. The Denver Comedy Works. The Punchline in San Francisco, Molly. Tammy Joe. Who else we got there? Early days of comedy. Big love to anybody that ever put me on stage early on. Anyway, I just wanted to put this episode out. Spicer, got to give big love to Spicer. Spicy Town. I just can't even really explain. Red Band, big love to Red Band. Jay Davis. Jay Davis, I love you and your craziness, of course. Dave Chappelle for letting me open up for him. And the Mighty Seinfeld for inspiration and all that good stuff. And the one and only Neil Brennan also, and Sarah Mello for having me always at the new material night. That's so vital. Belly Room, Original Room, and the Main Room, I love you. And most of all, I'm here 10 years in, and one of my favorite humans is not here, and that fucking hurts. So I've sent some big love out to Brody Stevens. Steven Brody Stevens. I love you, man. I love you big time, Brody, and I wish you were here right now. Right now, but I think about you every day. Every day I step on stage, I think about your looseness and your artistic freedom that you always went for. All right, here it is. So have a great weekend. Enjoy this bonus episode. And once again, I cannot thank you guys enough. From the bottom of my heart, I love all you guys. And here's to another 10 years. Check it out right now. John J.C. Morgan. All right, here we are. Another episode of Let There Be Talk. Brand new episode here. And it's coming to you on the... Today is actually the 10th year anniversary of me doing stand-up. Which is started December 6th, 2009. And I'm sitting on the couch here with a guy who I think I met the first day I did comedy. And introduce yourself.
My name is John Morgan, formerly known as J.C. Morgan when I was doing comedy.
Yeah.
And I started in September 2009, right before you.
Holy shit, man.
Yeah.
And I couldn't think of a better guest to have on today than you because... I know you smoked a lot of weed back then. That was your thing. Like, dude, I'm going to go get high. But I hope that your memory is pretty good and my memory is okay, that we can conjure up some stories of that first year of doing comedy.
Sure.
How did you get into it? Because let's talk about your history, the reason we bonded. How old are you?
I'm 57.
57. So I was 44 when I started. How old were you?
47.
47.
Correct.
So here's a couple of old dudes. We roll into the ha-ha, and we immediately kind of bond. You got long hair, and I'm a rocker. Everyone else is there is actually kind of dicks to us.
Sure.
Real cold. Before I even talked to you over the first couple weeks, I was just there in the corner by myself. Didn't know anyone, didn't know, just waiting for him to draw my name that magically was last all the time, you know, from their old fucking shake in the bucket bullshit. But I don't complain at all. That was all part of the amazing process of starting comedy and the hazing. But you and I bond because I guess you were on stage telling some Def Leppard story or something.
I think Whitesnake probably at the time. Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, this guy, man, and you and I immediately, mm-hmm. we were like those guys in class where we both moved to a new city, and it's like, there's a friend.
Right.
There's a friend.
I'm going to sit by him.
Yeah, and you need that, man. When in that atmosphere, at that time, comedy was not hot.
Yes.
10 years ago, it wasn't hot. There was maybe a couple big comics like Dave Chappelle, mm-hmm. Chris Rock, of course, and Maron hadn't even really, the podcast wasn't.
Louis C.K., none of that.
None of that stuff was really happening. We were just kind of doing it. I was doing it because I always wanted to do it. But you were working in rock and roll all your life. Let's talk about your back story before we get into the comedy.
My life, I've just followed my heart. You know, I watched my dad as a kid go to a job every day and hate it and just kill himself. And early on, I found the theater as my safe spot as a kid, and that's where I felt good. And I spent a lot of time in theater. And when I was in high school, the guy that ran the theater in high school, he decided to book a band to make money. And it turned out to be Elvis Costello, Rock Pile, and Mink DeVille.
Wow. At your high school?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So at 15, I was a stagehand that day for this rock show. And I was like, what is this? This is like...
What city are we talking?
Long Beach. Just down the road. Long Beach, California.
Shit. You're a California guy.
Sure, sure. And this was Elvis Costello's radio tour.
Oh, yeah.
And he produced a 45. It says Live at Hollywood High at that time. If you look in the liner notes, it says actually recorded at Millikan High, which was the school I went to. And that's where it was recorded that night.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's your introduction to rock and roll?
To live concert rock and roll. Right. Obviously, it was on the radio, but it wasn't anything tangible to me at that point.
Yeah.
My parents weren't into rock and roll, you know, and I was like, wow, what is this, you know? And so I continued in theater and that kind of thing through high school. And
were you acting plays or were you
just
doing
acting? I'll tell you what I started as a kid.
Yeah.
I was a magician.
Oh, yeah.
I was the magician in school. I did the dove act and the floating girl, you know, girl and the metamorphosis and the dancing cane and all that kind of stuff.
Where do you learn that shit? Because there's no YouTube back then. Did you buy a magic kit?
Well, amazing enough, in Long Beach, there was an organization called the Long Beach Mystics, which was a group of people trying to become magicians. And most of these people are famous magicians now today.
That's crazy.
And someone wrote an article about these people, and all of us have become quite successful in whatever endeavor we went off in life.
That's wild.
And I think because as a kid, you know, if you have the ambition to go out and find an extracurricular activity like that, it's kind of the passion you're going to have through your life, possibly.
Well, pre-internet, too. Mm-hmm, I don't think people with the internet now even have that. I recently said that I remember my whole life up until around 06, once the phones really hit. I don't remember anything from 06 to now.
Right.
But pre-phone in the hand all the time, you remember everything and you have passions and you're out and you're seeking stuff. Like, I've got to go see that.
Yeah, definitely. And what really changed my life as I want to be part of rock and roll, and I tried playing instruments and I played, you know, guitar and drums. I don't have that magic in me. I don't know what that is. I'm in awe of people that are musicians because I have tried and it's just not in me, but that rock and roll spirit is in me, definitely, and it just sparks me and I'm alive. So I was working on this show at Long Beach Terrace Theater, where Pryor shot his infamous show.
It was
that year, 78, same year.
Whoa. I opened for Burr there a few years ago. What a magic theater. It's exactly the same right now.
Is it really? I haven't been back in years.
It's beautiful.
Wow.
So you were working in there?
I was working there for a Long Beach Civic Light Opera as an electrician in theater again. And right next door connected to it is Long Beach Arena.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized they're loading in a rock show.
Oh, yeah.
So we're done. I sneak over there and I just kind of hide out in a corner and the door's open. I don't even know what's going on. Next thing I know, I realize I'm at Rush Moving Pictures.
Whoa.
Yes.
Whoa.
And it kicks off and the lights and the sound and the people and the drugs. I'm like, this is what I want to do.
Wow, what a great tour that is, too. And that Long Beach Arena, people, is so famous. I mean, everyone back in the day played there. They would play LA Forum, but they would also do Long Beach, which was 20 minutes away.
Sure.
So, you know, that's the famous Maiden, Scream For Me, Long Beach.
Uh-huh.
And all, you know, Van Halen, Slayer, everyone back in the day played there.
Yeah, it was a beautiful little room, you know. It was like 10,000 seater. I mean, just tight and compact, and the energy was just rocking, and right there on the ocean too, just beautiful little spot. You know, so I said, that's what I want to do. So from that moment on, I said, I'm going to see every rock show because I want to be educated in lighting, because that was my passion, was lighting at this point. I got into lighting as a magician because it was very important to my act.
Yeah.
When I got into theater, I was doing acting, but I was also in the stage crew, which they offered in my high school as a class. And luckily, the guy that ran it, John Bordeaux, was an incredible mentor to me, and I was struggling a bit in my youth. And he really took me under his wing and said, you could do this for a living. You know that. And my dad was a plumber. That's what I, you know, was destined to be.
Yeah, you're like, wait a minute.
He goes, no, you can do this. And he took me under his wing. And I said, this is what I'm going to do. You know? And so
I started, rock and roll lighter.
Yes, rock and roll lighting. And so I used to go to the Forum to see shows. And I saw my very first show at the Forum. I show up. AC/DC Back in Black.
Ooh.
Night one.
Ooh, and the lights on that tour. That the lighting on that was so beautiful. It was just a million in those racks. And then just the way they looked. I still got the photos, you know, they just hung great. And then the big white ones, you know.
Yeah.
For the washouts.
And the cannons and just the whole spectacle of that evening. And the bell, you know.
Yeah, the bell, yeah. The cannon's the next tour.
Yeah.
But yeah, the bell on that tour.
Yeah.
The way it dropped down and they lit it and then he hit it with the fucking sledgehammer. But AC/DC really had special lighting back then.
Sure.
Which was wild. It wasn't lasers or any of that bullshit. But it was really this look of like, hey, man, wow, what the fuck? These guys are famous. There's a million lights up there.
That's right. And they're all dancing to the music and just, you know, causing this, you know, atmosphere that's just...
And the volume, and then the lighting. Yeah. You don't even know how much goes into a killer concert, people. The behind the scenes. So you go there.
So the next one I go to, and I just kept upping for a few, and the next one that really just blew me away at the Forum, Billy Squire opening for Queen.
Oh, wow.
In 82.
Oh, shit.
And they had these massive light pods moving follow spots on stage, the lights built into the drum deck, and I'm like, this, nothing could be better than this. I mean, this was magic.
Right.
Until I went to Genesis
that year. Oh, shit.
And they had the very first moving light that changed colors and it was computerized. And I stared at that thing in awe for 2 hours during the show. And I said, that's my future. And I ran back at the end of the show.
Is that a Varia light?
Yeah. I ran back to the back of the house to the guy that was controlling. He said, what is that?
Yeah.
And he said, it's Varia light.
Yeah.
And I said, where? Where is this? He said, Dallas, Texas.
Oh, shit.
I packed my fucking bags and moved to Dallas, Texas within a couple of weeks.
You did?
Yes.
So did you call Varia Light and say,
I called them. They wouldn't answer my phone call.
Uh-huh.
They didn't want nothing to do with me. I moved out there. I get out there. I'm like ready to go. I give my resume. I'm here for you. Nah, bye.
Whoa, you just moved cold?
That's it.
What? That's fucking crazy over a lighting company.
Exactly.
I love that passion.
Exactly. So
holy shit.
A month goes by, 2 months go by, and I'm like, I'm not getting headway with these people. And I pick up the local paper, the Dallas Observer, and there's an article about a guy named Lee Lally, who I met on David Bowie's Serious Moonlight tour.
Oh, killer tour.
And he was a Varia Light guy.
Yeah.
And there was an article about him going to DeVry.
DeVry.
Technical Institute.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I literally drove down to DeVry and signed up for classes. And it took me about 18 months, and I got my certificate, Varia Light hired me, and I was in.
No shit. So what did DeVry teach you? Were they teaching
digital electronics?
Oh.
No, digital, because they wanted me to know electronics. They wanted me to be able to fix things, you know,
right.
Resistors, capacitors, IC chips, you know. Those
in
kind
case
of things.
The light stops working.
Well, they always did back then.
Oh,
they
shit.
This is the original Varia Light, you know.
Mach 1.
A lot of maintenance going on. And so they said, yeah, sure, you can come work for us, but we're not going to put you on the road. We're going to put you in the manufacturing department for 6 months and help you build these things. That way you'll learn them.
Yeah.
Well, the problem was they only paid minimum wage.
Oh, fuck.
Couldn't make my nut. So I had to throw a newspaper route in the morning.
A newspaper route?
Yeah, for 3 hours before I went in for a 10-hour day building lights.
Whoa!
And go home and repeat.
A newspaper route.
Yes.
How old were you?
I was 22 at the time.
22 with a newspaper route.
I was doing whatever it took. I was not going home. I was committed to making this happen.
This is great.
Yeah. So they finally said, okay, great. You've passed all this. We're putting you out on Moody Blues.
Moody Blues.
Whoa. Okay. So yeah, yeah. I went out Moody Blues a little bit.
And then and Moody Blues, that's like a weekly paycheck and per diem and everything?
Sure. Well, I started working full-time for the company, so I was on salary of the company, and now they just assigned me to acts.
Oh, I gotcha.
And so I went through a few acts, and then my first notable act was with Prince.
Wow.
Yeah, I did.
Which tour?
And I did the Sign of the Times movie.
Oh, at his place.
At his Paisley, yeah, at Paisley Park.
Oh, fuck, man. My favorite record ever from him. And I just took the tour, and they said, yeah, it was actually shot in this room right here.
I was there for 2 weeks shooting it.
Holy shit. Give me some stories on that. Yeah,
that was amazing. I mean, Prince, I mean, I had ultimate respect walking into the room. And they sit us all down, and they said, you know, Prince is here to work.
Yep.
You know, basically, don't talk to him.
Yeah.
Don't look at him unless he talks to you.
Yeah.
So, okay. And here I am, 23 years old.
Oh, my God.
You know, and I'm sitting about 12 feet away from Prince in his director's chair.
And
watching,
we're right after Purple Rain.
Right after Purple Rain, which I saw a few years, couple years before in Dallas.
So and he's just fucking monster. Giant.
First time I saw Prince, opening for Rolling Stones at the Coliseum when he got booed off stage.
Got booed off in the
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
So I saw the...
So ridiculous.
But just being around Prince and watching how focused he was and just watching the tapes and getting back on stage and just adjusting himself and, you know, singing and the guitar god he was and the dancing he did and their choreography and just the excitement of the whole experience.
That Sign of the Times record is a goddamn masterpiece. Ballad of Dorothy Parker, you know, Starfish and Coffee, Housequake. I mean, this thing is a behemoth of a fucking record. Now, when you're in there, are they playing all that stuff live, right?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely live. That Sheila E.'s in the group at that time.
Like you said, not bad for a girl.
No. And then how they're shooting the thing for 2 weeks?
Yeah, so they shot in Paris. They shot a stadium show for Paris.
That,
And then we came back and reshot the entire concert in Paisley Park so they can get the close-ups and the angles they wanted of him.
Kind
of
like
so,
Song Remains the Same. People don't know that. They shot part of that out of focus and then built some bogus little fake, you know, Madison Square Garden in Europe, I read. In London or something, and then they shot some of the close-ups and stuff like that.
I didn't know that.
That's why John Paul Jones has a wig on.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's what I read. I don't know, but
could be. You got to do what you got to do to make it happen. Yeah.
Wow. So was there an audience in there for that?
Yeah, he brought in extras. He brought in about 500 extras, so there are about 10 people deep from the stage.
Yeah.
So they can, you know, pan across them and get the reaction. And it just gives them some live energy while they're on stage, too.
And that room is massive.
I would do there, while, you know, he'd do each song about five times.
Oh.
So I'd go stand in the crowd, you know, about 12 feet away from the stage and just watch him perform.
You're not running lights?
No, at that time I was helping maintaining the system because I was just working my way
so
up.
So you're like a light maintenance guy.
Exactly. I was the head tech for Very Light for that system.
Yeah.
I kept it running. You know, so at the end of the song, something broke. We changed the light out and off we went again.
And where were you guys staying each night? A hotel somewhere?
Yeah, hotel just outside. It's, you know, Paisley Park's in Chanhassen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just out
it's in the weirdest area.
Out in the middle of nowhere.
What the fuck is this? It's just a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to believe he lived in there and died in there. It's just like, this is like a like zero vibe, you know?
But inside was the vibe. Outside, no vibe.
Inside was unbelievable. But still, I'm just saying around it, you know, like you're just kind of like, we're in an industrial area.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
I remember the last day of shooting, we had to get these shots. We were behind schedule. A tornado was coming for us.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And they're like, nope, no one's leaving. You know, we're just hoping it's not going to hit us.
Oh, my God.
And we lost power for 2 hours, and we're sitting around in a dark Paisley Park waiting for power to be restored and to finish this thing. And I think we were supposed to wrap at maybe 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and it was 3 or 4 in the morning before we were finally
done. Wow. And that is fucking iconic gig to work on.
So my name's on the credits of that movie.
Oh, shit. Yeah. And that's like your... Well, I mean, you work for Moody Blues and shit, but that's like a superstar.
To me, that was,
And you kind of like made it now. You moved to Dallas, rolled the dice.
I can't believe where I'm at now.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea this was even a thing I could do, was go to Prince's place and do a movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you ever talk to him once?
No, not that time.
Yeah.
I did years later.
Yeah.
And that was a weird conversation too, because I was working VH1 Honors and I think he was on it. And this time, and this was years later, and I'm doing lighting for television shows now.
Yeah.
The concert lighting.
Yeah.
I would do the VH1 Honors, the Grammys, the Academy Awards, Super Bowl halftime, all those kind of major events. So Prince comes out with his lighting designer, Justin Colley, old friend of mine. Now, Prince whispers in Justin's ear. Justin talks to me, and now I have to answer them.
Of course.
And I don't know who to look at. Do I talk to Justin, or do I talk to Prince? So it was this weird three-way conversation going on back and forth.
It's like a bad threesome. One of them doesn't have a condom. It's like so weird, right?
Totally. You know, and the funny thing is, he wanted to be lit in green.
Uh-huh.
And like, wait. You're not going to look good in green. I'm trying to talk about it. He's like, I want to be lit in green.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, we lit him in green, and he's a sexy motherfucker. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. He did what he wanted.
Oh, he knows.
It was spot on. You know, you don't doubt
after
that.
After you do the sign of the times, where do you go from there?
Well, that's just it. Just as we're getting ready to leave, the phone rings. They go, you got to go to L.A. What am I doing in L.A.? You're going to get Michael Jackson's Bad Tour started.
Whoa.
I'm like, what?
Back-to-back monster giant artist.
That's what I thought.
Wow, yeah.
But I thought also, I said, boy, Prince was very particular. What the hell is Michael going to be like?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was thinking, it's going to be 10 times what that was.
Right.
And so I fly out there, and we load into Hollywood Center Studios in L.A., and we get everything up, and I'm working on some lights, and all of a sudden, I hear this voice behind me. I really like that. And I turn around, and it's Michael.
Whoa.
And I'm
actually there.
He's there. And he's like, I like this light. What are you? Tell me about it. And I'm showing him, you know, I open it up, and I show him how the light moves, and the colors are made by dichroic filters.
Wow.
And there's little gobos in there that can project patterns. He's like, I want these for my place in Neverland, you know?
Wow.
At the time, they didn't sell the lights. They only leased, like Panavision did.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm taking very seriously, like, well, you should call this guy, and they could probably help you out, you know? Even thinking Michael could do whatever the hell Michael wants to do.
And so, was Kat the guitar player at that tour? That girl Kat?
Yes, she was. Who was background singer? Sheryl Crow. Yes,
right.
She was.
Yeah.
So we load into Hollywood Center, and they put the stage in, and they realize it's too tall. It's the room's not tall enough.
Oh, shit.
And so we had to load everything out and take it to stage 13 in Universal.
Oh, fuck.
And we camped out there for 6 weeks while he got the Bad Tour ready.
And he was just rehearsing?
Rehearsing day in, day out.
And were you watching that?
Yeah, and Bubbles was there at the time with the chimp. And
did you ever see him get crazy? Like, no, man, I sit like this.
Never.
Wow.
And he very soft, very, just come here, let me talk to you. You know, very direct, knew what he wanted, never got upset, just excited to be there.
Oh, yeah, wow.
And just watching him on stage, there had to be 20 people in the soundstage sometimes while he was rehearsing.
Yeah.
And it was like he was rehearsing for 80,000 people.
Whoa.
I mean, he'd cry, and I mean, just everything, just hit all the beats.
That's wild.
And just to hear the new album before it was even released.
Oh, whoa, that's even crazy.
So the last week we were there, they did an ABC special where they premiered it. So they brought TVs in, and we all sat around with him and watched his album get released to the public.
Oh, my God, man.
And just the joy in his face. And then off to Japan we went.
Whoa.
To open the show.
So now are you like a lighting, like, are you the headlining guy, or what are you
doing?
Still
the lighting chief.
Gotcha.
So I'm out there on that, and I get another call saying, hey, do you want to become the guy that operates the lights?
LD?
Yes, the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And I said, yeah. They said, well, we got this new act we wanted you to go out with called Whitesnake.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so I fly to Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Wow.
Into rehearsals with Whitesnake.
Is that the Still of the Night? What tour?
Still of the Night.
It's that tour?
Yes, 87, 88.
Wow.
Yeah, and we went out. I didn't know when I was starting, but it was a 1 year. We
start, 1 year.
Yeah, all around the world.
And are you making big money by then?
No. This company, and it didn't matter.
Yeah, yeah,
of course. You kidding me?
Yeah,
I didn't get in it for the money.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
No, and we were partying our asses off, and we were breaking even at the end of the week.
Wow.
Yes. So
had to be wild, right?
It was.
Those old tour buses.
Are you
buses?
Kidding me? I'm 25. I'm 24, 25 out with a Whitesnake. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God.
Touring around the world.
And were you on a bus?
We're on a bus.
Those shitty old Econolines or whatever.
Down every highway in America.
Wow. For a year.
Yeah. And then we went to America, all over Europe, Australia, Japan.
Right.
And with Tani Gatane was with David at the time.
Right.
And Adrian Vandenberg, Vivian Campbell was in the band, Tommy Aldridge was in the band, Rudy Sarzo.
Yeah.
And they were just all so happy to be there.
Just massive.
They were on the top.
Sales.
They were number one. They
massive.
That was it.
So you're doing lights for years. You get into TV lighting and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And for a long time, this is what you're doing. And it's a lot like me. I played music 25 years. At what point, how does it happen to where you're like, I want to try comedy. What gets you in that room that September 09? Because it's just a few months before me. And
sure.
I said, comedy was not what it is now. Because now, I think everybody wants to try it because it's on Netflix, it's on Hulu, it's on Amazon, it's on YouTube.
And,
but back then, you really had to have a passion to like, I want to do comedy.
True.
So how does this happen?
Well, growing up, you know, I listened to Carlin and Pryor.
Yeah,
I mean,
same
here. And they were rock stars to me.
100%.
You know, and so that was always in my heart.
Cheech and Chong.
You know? Yeah, Cheech and Chong, of course.
Yeah.
You know, and we, you know, was it a Groove Tube, Kentucky Fried Movie, those kind of things.
Yeah, Caddyshack.
Comedy, you know.
Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night Live was kicked off
the
late
good
70s.
Guys, yeah.
Sure. So, you know, I got through rock and roll. I ended up in television by, I was working for Alice Cooper and Great White, and they were on the American Music Awards, and I went to do some consulting with them. I looked around and said, I like this TV stuff, you know?
Right.
So I want to get off the road, which I've been doing for about 7 years now, and I want to do this TV stuff. So I abandoned everything, moved back to LA, didn't know nothing how to even do this, had a 15-year run in television. I was nominated for 5 Emmys for lighting, two Emmys.
Wow. And were you specializing in those shows? Or
in live event shows.
Live events,
yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
Grammys,
big live event.
Emmys, exactly. All that shit. Got it.
Uh-huh. And then it came to a point, I was about 45, and I felt like I'd done it.
Right.
I was just repeating myself now. And so I went to Burning Man that year.
Yeah.
Very cliche.
There it is.
Very cliche.
There it is. I'm looking for your gateway into comedy.
Right. And I'm just meditating. I'm out there just in awe of everyone just being as creative as possible with no limits.
Yeah.
And I just started meditating out there. And what would I allow myself to do if I just allowed myself to do it?
Yeah.
What do I think I could, you know, what do I think I couldn't do, but I want to do? And two things popped in my mind. Run a marathon.
Yeah.
And I was a 2-pack-a-day smoker.
Whoa.
And stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I'm going to do the marathon first because I got to quit smoking. Threw the cigarettes down, trained. 9 months later, ran my first marathon, the Rock and Roll Marathon in San Diego, of course.
Yeah.
Finished it in 4 hours and 20 minutes.
Shit.
And being a stoner, I'm proud of the 420.
And you quit the cigarettes, just cold turkey?
Cold turkey.
So did I.
Cold turkey.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Ran another marathon the next year.
Yeah.
Just as I crossed the finish line. Stand-up comedy.
Wow.
And so that was the thing. So I looked up and I found a mentor, Jerry Corley, who used to be a writer for The Tonight Show. And I contacted him. I said, listen, I want to do stand-up comedy, but I want to do it right. Will you mentor me?
Yeah.
And so we would meet and we'd talk about writing and structure and things like that.
Yep.
And we worked with him. And then I found myself at the HaHa. Because, of course, after you write comedy material, you have to get on stage and try it.
Right.
And I'll tell you, the first time my name got called.
Right.
I don't even remember walking the stage. I floated
like
to the stage.
Right? It's
I like got behind the microphone.
Yeah.
I lasted for how long? I don't know how long I lasted.
Yeah.
Maybe got one laugh and floated back to my seat.
Yeah.
It was the biggest disaster, but it was the biggest victory in the same moment.
Yeah.
I did it.
Yep.
And then it was a matter of doing it over and over and training myself. And that's where we met at the HaHa.
Do you remember when I came in? Because I like to ask people like what they saw. Like, do you remember you and I meeting?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, you were the motorcycle with the jacket. And you were a character. You know what I mean? That's what I loved about you.
Yeah.
And you were a rocker.
Yeah.
You know, and we were similar of age. And, you know, we had different, you know, similar connections. And,
yeah,
it was fantastic. And you had just a very strong point of view. And your style was completely different than mine.
Of course.
You know, and that's what I love, too. You know, and just to watch you and me each day, we'd show up. And we'd add a little thing. We'd take a little thing away.
Yeah.
We'd get new ideas. And just watching our material expand was so exciting.
And we were
exciting.
There every day.
Every day. But not only were we there every day, that was the first of 3 or 4 mics in a night.
100%.
You know?
100%.
And we're paying $5.
$5. We're paying?
We're paying $5 for 5 minutes to sit there through 40 other comics and wait for our 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember one time I waited through 40 comics, there's 2 people left in the audience. And I'm the last one picked.
Yeah.
I'm walking on stage. The last 2 people walk out as I'm walking on stage.
Oh.
I got on stage into an empty room.
Oh, my God.
You know, and that's comedy.
Yeah, that's comedy. I think it's like that to see who's going to tap out.
Yeah.
Who's going to tap out. I think when it really changed was when I started to host the Sunday, and I was like, all right, these are my fucking guys.
Yeah. This is my team. Right. That's right.
And then we just had this powerful open mic, you know, yeah. and just good times. And then Sean Kerrigan came in after mm-hmm, a while. Mm-hmm. Steve Henry.
Sure, sure.
And then all of a sudden, I had, and you had, we would eat after, and we uh-huh. had this friends, and there was nothing like that feeling of like, okay, I've got buddies around me. We can talk like, fuck, these jokes aren't working. I don't know mm-hmm. what I'm fucking doing. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. And then I'd go to the store and watch these killers and just learn, you know?
Right, right. The store was great for that, for yeah. upcoming comedians, allowing you to sit in the back of the room.
Back then when it was empty.
Yeah.
So we would just go, remember? We'd just sit in the back.
Completely empty.
And completely empty. And yes. we'd watch everyone and be like, okay, here goes this guy. Yeah. And the dudes were in there. Sebastian was in there. Yeah. Ali Wong was in there.
Yeah.
Bill Burr was in there. Oh, yeah. Maron was in there.
Yeah.
But the place was empty.
Yep.
And it was just this rock and roll vibe and jungle. We could just be in there. They're playing rock on the patio. So it was just for you and I.
It was
like we've been on this strip all our lives.
Yeah, but just seeing it from a whole different perspective now.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, man.
Just amazing. And then just to get to the point of being able to perform at the store.
Right, let's talk about that.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you, I did the belly room a couple times first.
Yeah.
But the original room, the big room, the main room.
Oh, the main room, yeah.
The main room, I saw Pryor perform there.
Wow.
Years before.
Whoa.
And to stand on that mark where I watched Richard Pryor perform.
Right.
And I had a hot, you know, it was a full crowd that night.
Yeah. Was it like a Matt Taylor show or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I had a great set.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I could have died that night.
Yep.
I was the happiest man alive.
Yeah.
You know, until the next day, the next open mic where no one's laughing, no one's paying attention.
Just eating dicks.
Eating dicks.
Yeah. dicks and French fries.
Isn't that amazing?
It's so... The juxtapose of it. I remember one time I flew in on a private jet with Russell Peters. He asked me to open for him in Denver. We did a theater or something, and then we landed in Burbank at the private thing. And I was at an open mic like an hour later. Weirdness of that, because you know the plane got in at like 10, and I go, oh, I can hit this Sordo's.
Mic
there,
Italian restaurant,
Studio City. Yeah, and there I was like doing an open mic.
Oh.
I remember Jason Collins hitting me, going, "Fuck, dude, you're a savage. You just did a theater, flew in on a jet. Now you're at an open mic, and the owner's going, you got to buy a hamburger.
Right?
You got to buy a hamburger." And I'm like, "Dude, I don't have any money. You got to buy a hamburger to go on." Oh my! And Brian Monarch's like, "Hey, this guy just did a theater. Leave him alone."
You That's know? Hysterical.
Like, holy shit, man!
And I remember seeing you with Bobby Lee, who was on Mad TV for a long time,
right?
And that was another part of my TV career. I did 10 years on Mad TV as a lighting designer.
Holy shit!
Yeah, so wow. I worked with all those guys. I did season 5 till the end of the show.
Yeah.
And that was an amazing experience, just watching those comedians in action and working things out and watching them in the sketch comedy environment. And a lot of those were stand-up comics
right.
that came into that show, and groundlings and things like that.
I think you and I, I want to talk about how we reconnected, which is crazy, but uh-huh. I think that you and I, it was like between you, Steve Henry, Sean Kerrigan, if I didn't have you guys there, I don't know what I would have done, because
really?
I was just kind of in, I mean, I knew nobody,
mm-hmm.
not a fucking soul in the business. Mm-hmm. Now I look back and I know everybody. Mm-hmm. I think about those years in there of the store, open mic, mm-hmm. you know, potluck. Mm-hmm. And not knowing anybody. So
right.
without you guys, it was just, I don't know what I would have done, you know? Because the buddy I started with, the two of us did it together,
mm-hmm.
He tapped out right away.
Right.
And I was like, oh, so I don't have a wingman.
Right,
you
right,
need
right.
that guy. Like,
right.
And we really did bond over, man, you should try this or
mm-hmm.
that. Or,
yeah.
Oh, that's a great joke.
Yep. But you were a hustler, man. That's what also attracted me about you. You're like my personality. You're laser focused.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I want to do, and I'm doing it. And you were either performing or writing or performing or writing and performing. And you just got better incrementally. And not only that, you're such a great person. You made friends so quickly in the community, you know, and that really opened a lot of doors for you because you're very personable and you really put yourself out there.
Yeah.
You know, and I admired that greatly in you, more than I could do, actually.
Right.
And it's amazing to watch, you know, your success, you know, and look at the people that, like Amir Kay and Jimmy Yang and all the people at the open mics that I used to go to are now getting success. And it's wonderful when I sit at home and I see someone on TV or I hear of somebody, it's like, oh yeah, that guy was, you know, started with us, you know?
Right? So after a while, of course, I just start going full fucking throttle,
sure, sure.
7 days a week. And then I get passed at the store. And once I'm passed at the store, mm-hmm. it's just a whole different, I never come back over the hill.
Right.
But what happens to you? Because I remember we were still friends and everything, mm-hmm. but you bought like a comedy club or something and you moved.
No, it wasn't that. Life dealt me a hand. And again, I follow my heart and my life.
Right.
And I was after my first year of comedy, my ex took my daughter to Omaha, where my ex was from. And my daughter was about to go through junior high and high school out there.
Yeah, that's right.
And I said, I'm not going to allow her to be without a dad.
Yeah.
So I sold everything, packed it up, and just moved to Omaha. No job, no nothing. And just reinvented myself. And I was going to be out there for 6 years, get her through high school, and then the intent was to come back to LA again.
Right.
And so I went out there, and sure enough, of course, I'm out there open mics, you know.
First,
and there's two open mics.
Which, by the way, Omaha. I was just in Omaha 2 weeks ago, first time ever.
Uh-huh.
When we flew in, it looked like we landed in someone's fucking farm. Uh-huh. There is nothing out there.
There's 10 million people in Los Angeles County.
Yeah.
There's 500,000 people in Omaha.
It is crazy. Yes. No man's land.
No lines, no rush hour.
No.
Everything's easy.
Whoa.
And so there's two open mics, one in Omaha and one in Lincoln, which was an hour away.
Yeah.
And so I started attending those, and there's about maybe 8 to 10 people doing comedy at the time. And all of a sudden, about a year into it, comedy blew up. And all of a sudden, we get like 10, 20, 30. And all of a sudden, we had open mics 6 nights a week in 2 different places. And this huge revolution was going.
Look at that. It was just unbelievable. Just in even Omaha, you know? That's the impact of, let's say the Chappelle Show, mm-hmm. Netflix, Burr and Rogan and Marin, the podcast get
mm-hmm.
big,
mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden comedy is in everybody's ears. I think a lot from Netflix and podcasting.
Yes.
Now people are like, I love this. I can listen to these people. Burt Kreischer, these guys are mm-hmm. all starting to come around. And Ari Shaffir, and those kind of guys are like heavy, big podcasts.
Right.
And I think that's getting into middle of America.
Right. But it was amazing watching these kids grow, and we were putting structure, because when I first got out there, there was no light. So a guy could go up there for an hour and no one would stop him.
Oh.
And it was brutal, obviously. It was just brutal. And so I started introducing, you know, the culture that I learned in Los Angeles to there, and that's what's fully implemented now with lights and timing and people respecting the light and those kind of things. And
so you're kind of doing comedy but helping run it.
This? Yeah. And I'm also doing out there, there's only a couple comedy clubs, so comedy happens in bars everywhere. There's so many bars in the Midwest,
right?
And they're looking for something to do. And oh my God, you want to show and get paid? And now I didn't get paid in LA.
Yeah.
I'm getting $300 for doing 20 minutes now out
Whoa.
There. You know, I'm opening for a hypnotist,
and
corporates, and doing that. And I'm actually making money now.
Wow.
And so that was a lot of fun.
And were you constantly writing?
Constantly writing.
Right.
Always, every day.
Yeah, because you and I wrote every day.
Always.
We would always write.
And in fact, me and a buddy of mine started a 10-a-day club, and we write 10 jokes every day and send them to each other.
Yeah.
Because I read this Drew Carey thing, write 10 jokes every day, keep your best one. At the end of the year, you got an hour's new material.
Yeah. Burr always says, I think he says, write 1 good minute a week.
Yeah.
So 4 minutes a month.
But you got to write some crap to find that good one.
Right.
I do anyway.
Definitely. But that was one thing, though, was you and I wrote, and uh-huh. we would sit in there and watch uh-huh. these people not. They would do the same 5 minutes.
Sure.
They would pay $5 and do the same five for a year.
Sure.
You know, like, what? I can't knock them. Maybe it's just got them out of the house. Maybe it got them away from the wife. Maybe it just they didn't know. But I was always like, hey, man, you're paying money. Fucking throw it into the wind, man. See what works.
Exactly. And that's what Bobby Lee told me when I first started. He goes, don't be afraid to bomb. Oh, just get out there and do it.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry about it. Just do it.
Yeah.
You know? And luckily, before I left, I entered Dante's competition, LA's Funniest Comic, and I won Best New Comic that year before I left.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had a little title to take out to the Midwest with me as well. Yeah. And I remember one of the last shows I did, I opened for Chris Kattan up in Sioux City.
Iowa?
South Dakota is where we're at.
Oh, yeah.
At the Hard Rock up there.
Oh, wow.
And there was like 3,500 people.
Whoa.
And did two shows with opening for Chris Kattan. And it was like, it was amazing. It was my dream manifested.
Yeah, you're doing comedy in your late 40s. Like, and you just can't even believe it. You're like, 3 years ago, I wasn't even doing this.
Yeah.
5 years ago, whatever, you know?
And almost, it's a small town. I'll be driving at night and I'll hear my name on the radio plugging me at a show, you know?
Yeah.
Or I'd be at a restaurant and people go, hey, you're that comedian, you know? And it's like, you know, big fish in a small pond kind
of
thing.
Though.
So that was a great journey out there, you know? And it allowed me freedom because it wasn't that expensive. And so I just stayed up with the comedy steady while I was out there.
Right.
I put an album out while I was out there
called
Live and Shattering on iTunes.
Well, iTunes, give them the name and everything so they can listen to it.
It's a J.C. Morgan, Live and Shattering.
Right.
And I also did a documentary movie about open mics and starting comedy and the trials and tribulations of that. And I shot for a year in Omaha every night. Wow. And so I got everything from fights on stage to, you know, people flashing to just bombing to just a guy pulled a sword out one night and tried to attack somebody.
Whoa.
And just every crazy scenario you can imagine.
Is that on YouTube?
It's on YouTube.
What's
it
called?
It's called Open Mic Comedy.
Whoa. Yeah,
J.C. Morgan Comedy YouTube page.
That's cool.
We premiered it at the Omaha Film Festival before I left. So that was another thing. You know, it's like I'm in Omaha going, what can I do out here that I couldn't do in L.A.? I could drop a camera anywhere I want. No one says anything out here. L.A., you can't drop a camera in the back of a room.
Fuck no, man.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I got
everyone to sign the clearances, and we made this great movie, and it's a lot of fun. People are discovering it every day out there.
That's great.
And so then I was out there, and I'm coming back to L.A., and I said,
so you're coming back to L.A. Your daughter's gone through school.
Coming through high school. She's going to move back with me now.
Right. And so you go, I want to move back to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what am I going to do? Because my daughter's going to college and comedy is a lot of fun, but it doesn't pay what I was used to getting paid.
It doesn't?
And I got a lifestyle I like to live, okay?
I love when people are like, if I put up a car photo and they're like, dude, you should buy that. I'm like, oh, yeah? Well, come check out my apartment.
Yeah.
There's nothing in it.
And that was the brutal truth of it, too. As I got it, you know, 7 years in, I'm watching guys that are just a hysterical that I mean, I would just not even close to, and they're broke.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, you know, I love comedy, but I've got to do something when I go back to LA.
Right, right.
And I got online and I said, well, maybe production managing would be a good thing to do.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I go on Madison Square Garden's website, who owns the forum, and they're looking for a production manager.
Wow.
And I call them, I said, I want that job. And they go, we got 40 applicants for this job.
Uh-huh.
I said, I'm going to get that job.
Yeah.
And I came out, and in 3 months, I'm the director of production at the Forum.
And this is fully remodeled Forum. Now, $1 billion in the upgrade?
It's hundreds of millions.
Right,
yeah,
not
a billion, hundreds of millions.
Right.
It's a 50-year-old building.
Yep.
And here's the story of how it got updated.
Yeah.
Was, remember the Prince run that happened there?
Yep, yep.
Prince did a month there.
Yep, but the church owned it at the time.
The church owned it at the time.
Right.
And the place was falling apart.
Totally.
I mean, I went night one to go see him because 20 bucks a ticket. Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm going to go see Prince, of course.
I went there and I was like, whoa, look at this old thing.
Exactly.
It was
ready for the wrecking ball.
I thought for sure it was going to be imploded. And if it wasn't what it was now, that's probably where the new football field would have went.
Exactly.
So,
And so people from the Madison Square Garden came out to see Prince perform.
Yeah.
And they looked around at this building and said, let's buy it.
Yeah.
And Did you know that the Forum is the same architect as Madison Square Garden?
Same
it's the same building.
Same building.
It's basically Madison Square Garden on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And so they bought that thing and gutted it.
And there was an amazing 1 minute speed video I can't find anywhere now that showed you the work in like 1 minute or two minutes that LA
amazing.
Times had. I might be able to find it on YouTube, but it was incredible to watch it.
Yeah, 2 years. It took about a year and a half to renovate it.
Yeah, they fucking shot fog in there for sound sound fucking light. They'd shoot lasers to show where the sound would go. So everybody, they got rid of it to make it strictly music. Mm-hmm. So it has a slight slope so everybody can, you know, see.
Yeah, no, it's the best house in the nation, if not the world, for live music.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it took this 50-year-old building that opened in 68. Aretha Franklin opened it.
Wow.
Thousands of acts have been through.
Zeppelin.
Everybody. Zeppelin. Stones. Yeah. You know, Elvis.
Everyone.
Jacksons. You name it. Has been there multiple times.
Multiple. And when you're backstage, it's got it painted. It'll say like Bruce Springsteen 31 times.
Right. You know? There's a tunnel that's, you know, a quarter mile long to get the trucks in. And down the sides of this tunnel is every act that's ever performed there painted on the walls.
It's crazy.
And it's awing.
Yeah.
You know, and we're still adding to them each day.
Each day.
Last night, I was at Schoolboy Q.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's every kind of act there.
Slayer Saturday.
That's where
Final
we're at.
Final show, yeah.
Yeah. That was the funny thing. Can I tell you about the Slayer? I'm there at Slayer, right?
Yeah.
And you text me, and it pops up my phone.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it pops up, D. Del Rey. Hey, you at the Forum? I text back, yeah, man.
Yeah.
I go, where are you? And he goes, I'm backstage. And I go, I'm backstage.
Yeah.
Where? He goes, I'm stage left. I go, I'm stage left. Yeah. I look over, you're 4 feet away from me.
4 feet, dude. 4 feet. I think that life is so fucking weird because if you really, I mean, life, I've said this many times. I feel like people's lives are laid out. Mm-hmm. There's a map for them. I believe this. Mm-hmm. And that. That's just your life. There's no real, it's just, wow. Because we lose connection for years.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year ago, I get a call. I said, hello? Hey, Dean, it's JC.
Mm-hmm.
I go, huh? Yeah, we used to do comedy together. I go, oh, what the fuck? How'd you get my number? What's going on? And you go, dude, I'm the head guy at the LA Forum, and I see you're opening for Bill Burr. This is incredible at the Forum. And all I thought right there was no better person to get this call from than the guy that I sat day one next to at the fucking open mics. And to see that from the open mic to a sold out Forum is just unreal. You know, like you can't even write that story.
No.
You know?
I was sitting at a meeting and we were talking about the next event and they're saying Bill Burr opening act Dean Del Rey. My jaw just hit the table.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe it. And when what the saddest part, I'm at every show at the Forum.
Yeah.
I couldn't attend that show because I had to be at a wedding in Portland.
That fucking sucked.
Of all days, I'm not there.
Still, to get the call and to think about that was exactly nine. It was exactly like a couple weeks away from my 9-year anniversary, which was
last
year. I was
so proud of you. I was so proud.
And to think it's you, a guy. That's how weird life is.
Yeah.
A guy I sat next to at an open mic.
Right?
9 years later, is running the place that I'm about to go on, and it's the biggest venue in America, like the greatest venue in America.
Yeah.
And all I kept thinking about was, what are the fucking odds that it's this guy calling me, man?
Right? No, but it's amazing. Life's amazing that way.
It's so wild. Do you step on stage at all anymore, or you work so much?
I work so much. I did a benefit show when I first came back to town at the Comedy Union, and then after that, I just... You know, to me, comedy, it's a daily thing.
Yeah.
I mean, to keep your chops up and to be on top of it. And I just, I don't want to half-ass it.
Yeah, it's so good.
You know, and so I'm putting my attention in other places. And I'm hoping one day to pick it back up again.
Yeah. And you get to see great comedy at the Forum. Look, Sebastian's coming. Mm-hmm. Joe Coy's doing two mm-hmm. nights. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Burr will be back there again.
That'll be great.
And comedy is in this arena level now.
Yeah.
And that's pretty wild to be able to see comedy at that level from behind the stage. You know, like, wow, I was in the open mics.
Yeah.
And now here I am running this place.
No, it's great.
What's that job at the Forum like? The Forum is my favorite on the planet. And what's it like? You work 7 days a week constantly?
No, I don't work 7 days a week. You know, I try to work 5 or 6 days a week. But, you know, a show day, I mean, people know, but for a show, when they show up in the morning, basically the arena's empty.
Yeah.
The arena's empty.
It's nothing.
And idling outside of the arena is anywhere from 4 to 32 semis full of equipment that have to be unloaded, set up, put up in the air, sound checked. 2,800 seats have to be laid out on the floor, ready to go for the audience to come in. Everything happens. The show happens. Seats get struck in 40 minutes. The entire thing gets loaded out, back on trucks. So my day is from 5 a.m. to about 3 a.m. I work about 23-hour day.
Whoa. And it's a salary gig, right?
It's a salary gig. Exactly. And I got a partner, and we trade off.
Yeah.
You know, because we can't do that each day.
Oh, no, you'll be trapped.
I just did it yesterday for Schoolboy Q. I'm off today. We're back in for Kiss Jingle Ball.
Kiss?
Kiss Jingle Ball FM.
Oh, the rest of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they got B2S and Katy Perry and those kind of acts.
Yep.
And I got on Saturday, I got Manah, who's the U2 of Latin America.
You told me about that.
They're doing their 7th sold-out show in just a couple of months at the Forum.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I got Jonas Brothers with a massive production, 22 trucks.
Jonas Brothers, yeah. Big one, huh?
Big, big. Wow. It's going to be a lot of fun.
What's the capacity seated? And with the no seats on the floor?
Well, the floor, we have a 3,200 capacity regardless.
3,200
which is a lot. Most arenas don't have that kind of capacity.
The floors, the seats that go down, because at Slayer, it was half seats. And
correct.
Then,
we set it up differently for each show.
So
we had a half GA.
3,200 on the floor up to front row.
Correct. So we can go up to 17,000.
17,000.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I think in Slayer we had about 14,000 that night. So we didn't wrap it all the way around behind the stage.
Oh yeah. So you know what I mean? Gotcha. Wow. So most are 14 because
of
the sidelines. Like, I saw Temple of the Dog there, and they had...
Oh, you were there? That was an amazing night, wasn't it?
Oh, dude, I took a picture. I just posted it on my Instagram. Oh,
that was so good.
It was beautiful,
Yeah, that was 360.
Yeah, 360, you know, because they had no stuff behind it. And I was about 20 feet away. And you know that part where they always stick the VIP people?
Yep.
It's the first level.
Yep.
There's no better
spot. Oh, that's my spot.
That's the spot.
Yeah.
Oh, you just sit there. You're out of the lunatics. Yeah. You see the band perfect. Yeah. The sound.
That's where I went on Slayer that night. After I left you, I went up there.
Yeah.
And who's sitting just to the left of me? Post Malone. Yeah. Rocking out the Slayer. Yeah, just Post Malone. Crazy on him. Yeah.
You got to see a lot of, like, L.A. is the most premier celebrity sightings backstage.
Sure.
Right?
That's just it. I mean, that's the thing about L.A. It's just not about the concert. It's about the whole spectacle of the thing. The meet and greets and all the celebrities. And Brad Pitt needs to come in the back. And, you know, Kanye's dropping by. And, Kanye, we just did 2 Sunday services and it was IMAX premiere last month.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
You know?
He's a creative mind, I'll tell you.
Wow. That's crazy, right?
One of my favorite evenings, you know, I'm a big GNR fan.
Yeah.
GNR did 2 nights there.
Yeah.
Second night, they did 4.5 hours.
Oh, that's right.
Oh,
that was the last night of the tour.
He wouldn't get off stage.
Yeah.
He just kept doing every song. It was for a GNR fan.
Yeah.
Oh.
Is there a union time there? Like like the Green Coats at New York?
Yeah, but, you know, they just pay it.
Whoa. What is it like? It's like $1,000 a minute after? What is that? Because you got to pay all the union guys, right?
Well, you know, it's just more that's going to add on to your bill, basically.
Right.
But, you know, on a show like that, you know, the union bill is $100,000 anyways.
Yeah.
You know, so what's another $20,000 on top of that?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But,
that's awesome.
But I'll tell you what. That was a 13-truck tour. I've never seen such an efficient tour. 13-truck tour.
Yeah.
We usually loaded in about 3.5-4 hours. 90 minutes.
90?
The entire show was out the door in trucks.
Wow.
I've never seen anything like it in my life. That production manager and stage manager, that operation were... It was unbelievable.
Now, do you guys have anything to do with the football field next to it as far as entertainment or anything?
No, that's a different company. That's Kroenke that owns that, who owns the Rams and the Pepsi Center in Denver and the Nuggets out there. So that's a different, you know, billionaire.
Right.
What's exciting for our company, MSG, which we own that Madison Square Garden, the Forum,
the Boston one?
The Beacon.
Oh, the Beacon.
And the Chicago Theater.
Yeah.
We're building a brand new entertainment space in Las Vegas.
Oh, where?
Called the, behind the Venetian, called the MSG Sphere. And it's this big, giant, 30-story circle building. It's all video wall.
I heard about that.
It's all video on outside, and it's an 18,000 seat theater inside with state of the art technology, the best sound, the best video, the best lighting, subwoofers built into the floorboards.
Whoa.
And it's going to revolutionize the entertainment space.
Oh my God.
It's going to open in the next year, and it's just going to change the game.
That's going to be insane.
Yeah. It's really, it's fun. It's the future. You know what I mean? Because currently we're doing shows in basketball arenas.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So why not build a space? So he wants to perfect this and then build one in every major city.
Whoa, that'd be just total game changer.
Yeah, total game changer.
Wow.
So it's very exciting to be working for this company right now.
There is nothing better than walking around the Forum and seeing those photos of everyone that's played there. That is just as fun to me as seeing the band. You know, you walk up and you just go like, look at this Zeppelin photo.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is 72, the Beards.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Well, look at this Elton John with the fucking Airborne on the piano.
Sure, sure.
Oh, Neil Young. It's just, it's so, that room is electric.
It's
amazing. I even hear Laker games in there when I walk in.
And, growing up in L.A., that was my place. So I walk down and go, I look at the photos and go, I was at that show.
Yeah.
I was at that show.
Yeah.
I was at that show. And it's just, and you remember it always.
Yeah.
It's just a magic moment in life. And that's what we, you know, our culture at MSG is we making magic moments for people.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what it's all about. Yeah. Nights they will never forget.
I remember seeing Van Halen 1984 tour there. My buddy was a blow dealer, and he goes, "Yeah, we got to bring some blow to there to the band." And I was like, "Really?" And we just drove down that tunnel. We drove down the tunnel, parked, and got out. And the dude is like, "All right, here." And he just took the blow. We didn't see the band. And he goes, "Here's your passes. Have fun." And we're just like, "Whoa!"
Crazy, man.
Oh, fucking. Well, I can't even tell you how great it was to talk to you on the 10-year anniversary of my comedy.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. And it was just wild just to be able to have you on, you know. And now to have you back in my life, I'm at the Forum all the time.
You know.
And you live right up the street, so we got to have food and fucking hang out.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and come see some comedy. And maybe one of my shows, I'll just throw you on just for comedy.
I'd go for it,
It'd
brother.
It'd be great.
You know it.
I'll do it 100% for sure. It'll be great.
I love it.
All right, you got any Instagram or anything?
No, you've been one of those people that, Instagram? No, I'm not into Instagram.
Cool.
I got the YouTube channel.
Yeah, tell them it.
JC Morgan Comedy. Check that out. And and if you're at the Forum, come say hi.
Yeah, man. Who's coming up big that I would love?
We're finishing the year with Grateful Dead Company.
Mayor.
That's going to be a great evening.
Fire.
You know,
fire.
We got Eagles coming through doing Hotel California, the entire album.
Oh, when
year.
Is that? I got to see
that's
that.
I think March, April.
Which, by the way, I went opening night. Eagles opened it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you flew in on a plane, they had the Hotel California record on top, and it spun.
World is in the Guinness Book of World Records. Largest turntable in the world.
On top of the LA Forum, and it was there for about a month.
Yeah.
And as you flew in, you knew you were home. You're like, look at that.
Is that spectacular?
Look, I got goosebumps right now. That fucking shit made me crazy.
Yeah.
And I remember going to opening, and I was like, this place is unbelievable.
Yeah, we don't know nothing half-assed there. It's all out.
Well, I'll tell you one thing before we go. I did comedy in there, and Bill said the same thing. The sound, Bill said, and I said, it was the greatest sound of all time doing comedy. And I remember when I got up off stage, Bill goes, dude, you killed. You acted like it was just a club up there. I go, dude, when you're up there, it feels like a club.
Right.
A 14,000 seat club.
Right,
but
right.
But it felt like it. It didn't feel, there wasn't that
cavern feel.
Echoey yeah, cavern of drugs.
Yeah. Like arenas have. Yeah.
Dude, it was like, I could hear guys like, 30 rows back, like, yeah, Delray.
You know, like,
it was weird how it would pop out.
No, it's a magic room.
Oh, man, fucking, you know, so, wow. So great to talk to you, man. And also, I loved your attitude of, like, you're exactly like me. I did that Comedy Store main room, the same spot that Richard Pryor, you saw Pryor in.
Yeah.
And that's all that mattered.
Oh.
It's not about the monetary
Nothing.
Or the fame. It was like, I'm here where the legends were.
Yeah. I'm standing on my heels.
Yeah.
Giving myself to you now.
Yeah.
And you're laughing. So
that's great.
Life is beautiful.
Thank you, dude, for doing the podcast.
Live, love, and laugh.
Yeah, dude. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to an episode of Let There Be Talk. And this is a special episode. It came out on Friday, which I never do, but it's the 10-year anniversary. And I want to thank all of you, every one of you, for your support over the last 10 years of doing comedy and 8 years on this podcast and 506 episodes. I owe it all to you guys and great friends like JC. And thank you. Keep the candles lit.